Leadership File on Premier.
Welcome to the show which helps you lead where God has placed you. I'm Andy Peck. Well, I'm delighted to welcome to Leadership File Sharon Amesu. Sharon is a criminal barrister turned professional speaker and leadership coach. She's the founder of SA Consulting, which helps CEOs and senior leaders inspire their influence factor so they can empower others to take inspired action. She's a leadership fellow of St. George's House, Windsor Castle, and is one of only four appointed leadership facilitators for the leadership programs that's run at St. George's House. So great to welcome you, Sharon.
Thank you very much, Andy. It's great to be here.
So you must get asked about your transition from criminal barrister to becoming a professional speaker and leadership coach quite a bit. So how did it all come about?
Yeah, that's actually the number one question that I'm often asked. And it really came about because throughout my career, I've always leaned into the direction that God has taken me and asked him what's next. And even starting out at the bar, it was very much a sense of vocation and calling for where I knew God wanted me to be in terms of being a voice and empowering the voice of those who felt as though they had no voice in society. And around about 7 years or so into my practice, I began to get a sense of unrest about where I was, what I was doing, the impact that I was having. And specifically at that time, I was doing a lot of work with people who'd experienced domestic abuse, and that was disproportionately women. So I was doing a lot of work around that. And that time also coincided with me, when I say coincided, judiciously I use that word coincided.
Sure.
But it came at the same point at which I was introduced to coaching. And coaching was a concept that was completely new to me, this whole idea of reflection and really understanding what you wanted to do and why you're doing and purpose and all of that sort of stuff. That conversation was new to me. And at that time, the meeting of those two points, I really began to ask God what was next. I knew there was an unrest. I knew that I wasn't getting the same sense of fulfillment. But I didn't know what next. I began to pray. And I specifically remember one afternoon being sat in my conservatory and saying to God, where do you want me to go next? And he took me to Ephesians 4:29. And that is, don't use foul or abusive language. Let everything you say be good and helpful. And this is what struck me. So that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. And I just remember that just literally hitting me, that so that your words may be an encouragement. And I knew there was just this sense of using my voice in a way which would uplift and encourage and equip. And so that's where the journey really began, away from the bar into coaching and quite circuitously really into professional speaking.
And so Do you see, you're obviously you're using a number of the skills of being a barrister in your professional life, clearly.
Yes, absolutely. One of the key things, of course, about being a barrister is the ability to communicate effectively and to motivate and inspire people to action. And that's a lot of the work that I do now with leaders, helping them to become more effective in that area.
Yeah. And obviously, and you're looking, you obviously often, sometimes you have a jury in front of you that you're seeking to win over, and that's obviously connects very well with the Christian approach to things.
Oh, most definitely. So you've got the jury in front of you, you've got your tribunal, that's your judge, or you've also got your client that you're wanting to persuade and invite to take on board a certain approach or strategy that you're embracing. Mm. So there's a whole range of stakeholders that you'd have to have the ability to move to action. And that's very much what leaders, in effect, are required to do in their work, move people to inspired action.
Yeah. So much of your work looks at communication, and as a coach and a keynote speaker, you're often asked to speak or coach on leading with what you call exceptional presence. So what do you have in mind there? What do you tend to typically cover in that kind of area?
Well, it starts actually with what's going on within. So oftentimes when people think of presence, leadership presence or exceptional presence, they're often used interchangeably. At its heart, it starts with what's going on in the individual inside as opposed to the outer expression of that. And so the starting point is helping the leader to really understand those core things about themselves that makes them an authentic leader. So I start with things such as inner confidence and self-awareness and self-appreciation. I start with helping a leader to get connected to their vision and their values, because those are the things that will underpin their leadership and their expressed authenticity. And then externally, we're also looking at things such as their body language and how they connect, engage, and relate to people through their vocal skills and their articulation. So it's both inner work and outer expression.
Right.
The starting point for me really getting to grips with this was when I was starting out in my career very early on, Andy, and in one of my very first jury trials, the judge was opening up the case to the jury and just giving them guidance, legal guidance, about the approach that they are to take in the case, and was explaining what their role was and what his role was. And he said to the jury, members of the jury, you are the judges of the facts in this case, and I'm the judge of the law. And that means that essentially you are listening to what the witnesses say, and then you are deciding what you accept and what you reject. And in front of you, you have a notebook and you have pens and so on to take notes. But please don't be overly concerned with taking notes. Actually, pay attention to the witness. Notice what the witness not only is saying, but how they are saying it. And that struck me immediately, that there's this whole sense of, it's not just what you say, but it's the way that you say it that communicates leadership. And for many leaders, what often happens is there's a dissonance, there's a leadership dissonance between the words that come out of the mouth and actually what their body language is communicating. So it was very early on that I got an inkling into the significance of that.
Yeah, no, splendid. And I mean, some Christians are a little uneasy with this talk. I mean, they say, the only presence they want to portray is God, you know. And so it's kind of, it's sometimes people have to come out, get over that. The kind of worm theology kind of approach to things.
Of course, I like that. It's of course we have the Holy Spirit, and we He moves in and through us, and we want the presence of God. It's not an either or; they're not in conflict at all. Presence is very much about how and the extent to which you connect, engage, and influence other people, And we're in an increasingly transparent age where people are expecting more and more from leadership. We're moving away from simply do what I say, and that's it. People want to get a sense of your authenticity and your realness and you walking your talk. And so presence is really all about that. It's the truthfulness of the leader as expressed through communication.
I like that very much. The truthfulness of the leader is expressed through communication. Thank you. Yeah, that's splendid. Yeah. Now, I've heard it said that CEOs are increasingly ditching PowerPoint because they feel it detracts from their presence. Have you any other thoughts on the value or otherwise of, you know, that the kind of ways in which we communicate, whether we use PowerPoint or audio, visual, or what?
I'm not an expert on that. There's a great speaker called Lee Jackson, who's an expert on power. You've had him on the show, actually.
Yeah, indeed, we have, yes.
And he's the expert on PowerPoint and how to use PowerPoint. And so my only views on PowerPoint is to ensure that I'm not at all averse to it. I don't believe that it should be completely abandoned at all, because it is a way, or can be a way, of engaging an other of the senses of the audience. And we know that audiences engage in different ways: auditory, visual, kinesthetic, etc. So in any way that we can engage those senses, that's always a good thing, and PowerPoint can do that effectively. The issue that I feel arises is when there's an over-reliance and an over-dependence on them, when leaders talk to the PowerPoint as opposed to the audience. Yep. So it's more about how the PowerPoint is used rather than that it is used. And I think when PowerPoint is used effectively, it can very much enhance the presentation and increase engagement.
Well, we're coming out to a break shortly, but I just wanted to kind of change tacks a little bit because, you know, your work helps female leaders. And of course, I mean, in the last decades, it's become more common for women to be in formal leadership roles inside and outside of the church. I'm just interested in the kind of issues that you're addressing, whether there's still a sense that the women don't feel accepted or whether they've moved on to other kinds of issues.
Well, we're addressing years of sort of business work culture when we're talking about dealing with the leadership gap or the gender pay gap or women in senior roles. We're really dealing with cultural issues within business environments and moving women into more male-dominated positions presents with its own challenges. And so really much of the work that I do with female leaders that I'm called to speak to them about is often around things such as imposter syndrome.
Right.
Of course, imposter syndrome is that sense of I'm going to be found out. How have I got here? I'm a fake and I'm a fraud, et cetera, et cetera. And so oftentimes I'm called in to speak to women's networks and women's conferences around those sorts of issues. Mm. How does a woman really own her ambition and stand her ground in a male-dominated space? I'm also invited to talk a lot about courageous conversations. And so, again, that's touching on how women negotiate up, how they lead up, how they're able to assert their authority and do so in a way which is entirely in keeping with their feminine identity, as opposed to having to take on a male, inverted commas, approach to leadership. So really it's about how a woman functions as herself in a male-dominated space and leads from a place of inner integrity. That's really where I tend to be called in to speak.
Splendid stuff. Well, you're listening to The Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Sharon Amesu, and we'll be back just after this. Welcome back to The Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Sharon Amesu. Sharon is a criminal barrister turned professional speaker and leadership coach. She's the founder of SA Consulting, which helps CEOs and senior leaders increase their influence factor so they can empower others to take inspired action. We were talking before the break, we just talked a bit about communication and the importance of speaking and presence. And particularly, Sharon is also asked to assist and help women who are involved in the leadership role. She was sharing a little bit before the break of the kind of things she gets, issues she gets asked to address. So the kind of coaching that you give women, Sharon?
So, again, it's around the same sort of thing. Mm. So we've got oftentimes the thing that really emerges is around confidence. And it's articulated in a number of ways, but really it's about confidence, that self-belief, the knowing that you have the skills, that you've got the ability, that you've got the talent to step up to the next level. And there's lots of research around this, Andy, around women. For example, when it comes to applying for that next level in their organization, then having to, in their own minds, satisfy themselves that they meet at least 90% of the criteria compared with our male counterparts who are more satisfied going forward if they've got about 60%. And that tends to be around this issue of confidence, knowing that even if you don't have all of the boxes ticked, that you'll be able to develop the skills and you'll be able to step up and play a bigger game. So much of my coaching is around building that self-belief for female leaders and helping them to exude that confidence so they position themselves for promotion, both in their own minds and in the minds of those who are making the appointments and making the decisions.
Right, right. And obviously, if some have suffered from racial discrimination as well, that's an additional issue that they're having to overcome.
Sure. So that's a multi-layered position or issue. So for BME women, they have both the gendered issue and also the racial issue. And that can impact both themselves and the wider work community, the wider work culture. And it's very much about helping women to see, for me, the way in which I help women in particular with this and how I was able to deal with it was to think about legacy. So the power of understanding that when I rise, that when I advance, that it opens up the door of opportunity and opens up the mind to embrace opportunity for the next generation of women cannot be overstated.
Yeah.
And that was significant for me. So I have a daughter, she's 20 years old, and I recall, for example, as I was invited to join part of the leadership team at Windsor, that the first thing that hit me was this sense of imposter syndrome. How am I going to step up into this space? I'm a BME woman, and I'm going to be looking at developing leaders who are coming from around the globe. How do I operate in this new space? And the thing that really was impactful for me was thinking about my daughter and asking myself, how would I want her to operate in this space? How would I want her to embrace this platform? And that really drove my ambition. So yes, there is that additional layer in relation to race, but for me, I've used that as fuel to drive me forward, and I encourage other women to do the same.
Oh, that's beautifully put. Thank you, Sharon. So, Sharon, you also help female entrepreneurs who will often get stuck. They want to get up. Maybe they've started a business or they've started a venture. Maybe they've even given up their job, and then they get stuck, which is obviously a common thing for male entrepreneurs as well. What kind of things do you say to those folk?
Okay, so one of the things that I say, because it is incredibly common, is not to expect one too much of yourself. So sometimes what happens is we anticipate that we'll take the leap and we'll immediately land. But that's not the case at all. When it comes to entering into the business world, things often take longer than we anticipate they'll take. So giving ourselves time, giving ourselves space, understanding that things sometimes take longer than we expect is really important. And also stepping away from perfectionism. So one of the things that can really hold us back as business women is this idea that we have to have all of the I's dotted and the T's crossed and everything has to be perfect. But in fact, if we're prepared to move when things are not perfect, when things are not fully aligned, and actually being willing to just move forward when things are not perhaps exactly as we'd like it to be, can really help to drive our business forward. And see how things, be more willing to see how things evolve on the road, as it were. And that sense of inner confidence is so important, the self-belief and knowing that you've got what it takes, that you're entering into a different space, that this was very significant for me, that at the bar, clearly whilst I was self-employed, I was working in a space with other practitioners.
Yeah.
But when you move into business, you're really accountable to yourself, so to speak. So staying on track and understanding you're operating in a different space, but that you've got what it takes. And if you'll stay the course, and if you'll stay committed, and if you'll have the right sort of people around you to champion you, then you can be successful and you can make a difference.
Brilliant. No, thank you very much. That's very helpful. Well, just as we close, Sharon, there's you help leaders with accountability.
Yes.
The word means different things to different coaches and leaders. So what are the kind of things you talk about and how it might practice, work out in practice.
Yeah. Well, you're quite right. For most people, Andy, the word accountability has negative connotations. And so they see accountability as something that you're called upon or you're called out on when you've done something wrong. Whereas the approach that I certainly have to accountability is much more about ownership. And there's an infamous story about a famous story about Harry Truman, President Harry Truman, having on his desk the White House a sign which says the book stops here. And he used that as a reference point to guide him in his decision making, to say, whatever happens, I am the leader here and I must take full responsibility for the outcomes, for the results that are emitted from this from decisions made in this office. And accountability is all about that. It's about enabling a culture within an organization, within a community group, within a church setting, where each person is able to say, it's not about someone else, it's about me. And for leaders, leadership accountability is essentially saying, answering this question, how has my leadership, or what is it about my leadership that has contributed to this result and led to this outcome? It's about taking 100% responsibility and not passing the buck. And that's both for, and that's all about consequence. So both positively and negatively, understanding that we don't pass on, we take hold. And that's where the learning comes. The leader who's willing to take responsibility learns from the outcomes and is able then to move forward, sets the tone in their organization and the culture within their organization for those team members to do exactly the same.
And I suppose in some settings, accountability structures are already in place. But in others, maybe you need to create them in order to be accountable to someone, or at least have someone that you can bounce things off.
Yeah, there is that. I mean, there are organisations which may have, on the face of it, accountability structures, but it's the extent to which that's actually being lived out. So is it within the culture? Is it within the DNA? Are you having regular accountability conversations? And that's at every level. So it's not just a top-down approach, but is everyone within the organization free and liberated to be able to have those conversations with their peers, with their direct reports? And the other thing about accountability that makes it work well is where people are willing to admit mistakes, because you've created a culture where a no blame culture. So rather than me being fearful of admitting that I've got something wrong, I'm willing to do so because I know that I'm not going to lose my job, as it were, or sure. I'm not going to be castigated. So it's not just about having the structures, but what is it that underpins that and supports that being lived out?
Wonderful. Thank you. Well, Sharon, we've our conversation's ranged widely, so I've been distilled a lot of wisdom from what you said, so thank you so much. And how can listeners get in touch with you?
Well, you can visit my website. You can find out more about me at www.sharonamesu.co.uk.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you very much. And just in terms of spelling, it's Sharon. Amesu is AMESU .co.uk.
Yes. Fabulous. .co.uk.
Sharon, thank you so much. And look forward to accessing some of that material myself, and also encourage leaders to go to your website and to find out more.
Okay, thank you very much, Andy. Great speaking with you.
So you've been listening to Leadership File with me, Andy Pecker. I was joined, as I say, by Sharon Amesu. Sharon is a professional speaker, leadership coach, and you can find out more on her website at sharonamesu.co.uk. You can go to Premier's website and download Archive recordings of the Leadership File. You can go to the Premier's shop and get a copy of my book, The Leadership Road Less Travelled. And hopefully you can join me next Sunday at 3:30. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to The Leadership File on Premier. Andy Peck serves as a tutor at CWR, a Christian charity whose courses and publications aim to apply God's word to everyday life. Contact him via email apeck@cwr.org.uk.